Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Wax Cast, episode 23. I am your host, Gavin Wax, and today, January 6th, definitely a day that will live in infamy. Maybe not as much as Pearl Harbor. I know a lot of people are clutching their pearls claiming that, but certainly in some senses will go down in history. And that's why I wanted to bring on a friend of mine, a previous guest of the Wax Cast, an independent journalist, Gabby Shapiro, who was present today in the storming, if we could describe it as that, and the besieging of the Capitol building. I wanted to get his insights as a primary source to exactly what happened today, pushing through all the spin and the gaslighting and all the other mainstream media nonsense, just to have a clear understanding of what the American people were witnessing unfold today. So, Gabby, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. First, I'd like to start off with saying that I'd like if this episode could be dedicated in honor of Ashley Babbitt, who was killed today in the course of the protests. The story's still unfolding. We don't know what happened, but you know, she died. She was a patriot, an Air Force veteran, I believe, and you know, we hope that her memory is a blessing and an inspiration for all patriots.
Absolutely. She was a patriot, a model citizen. I believe it was 4 tours of duty abroad. She should not have been executed in such a disgusting fashion, shot through, I believe, a wood panel or glass. She was unarmed, shooting an unarmed woman. I mean, this is absolutely despicable, disgusting what happened. And let's maybe take a quick moment of silence to remember her name, her legacy, and thank her for everything she did for this country and send to her our prayers. And I'm also coming to the understanding now that maybe 3 additional people have died in some sort of hospital after something may have happened, some kind of injuries that may have been life-threatening. We're not sure of the details. We're not sure of the names, but I'm also sending them our prayers. Should have been, you know, wasted so needlessly and cut short from police or whoever it was. This is despicable. But what happened today certainly is historic. And I just want to get a sense of what happened. You were at the original protest today on the mall. You heard the president's speech.
No, I was not there.
Oh, you were not there. Okay. You tell me from the beginning. Where were you? When did you get there?
So I was supposed to be there, but my friends decided to show up to my house 3 hours late, so I missed that part. I would have left if I knew they were coming 3 hours late, but it kept being, we're leaving in 20 minutes, we're leaving in 30 minutes, and I just kept delaying until it's like, okay, you know, whatever, I'm just waiting. We drive down there, and we get there as that is ending, and people are making their way to the Capitol building. So you make your way to the Capitol building, and there apparently people were storming the Capitol building, and it was interesting. I got there after the original storming had happened, and you know, people were already inside, and so I got to witness the whole from that point onwards for the rest of the day.
How easy was it for you to work your way through the crowd to get inside? Was there a mass of people? Like, what was the scene like outside leading in?
So originally, by the time I got there, you could just walk in, which is what I did. Obviously, you know, you had to climb the steps, get through some scaffolding, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. But, you know, you do all that, it's just you walk in. And you know, wasn't hard at all.
Did you see police officers? Did you see barricades? Did you see any sort of security or anything?
Yeah. So there were police officers. They were clearly outnumbered. You know, a ton of people there. They were, you know, keeping us from going further into the building. Some people I get on Twitter after this whole thing. And I see that some people made it into the Senate chambers. I didn't obviously know about that at the time. So I got to see a very limited perspective, and you know, all the clips coming out from the internet now, you're getting to see a lot more of what actually went on.
What part of the building were you in when you got in? Was it was it like the rotunda? Was it more of a touristy area? Was it like, you know, some of the back offices?
Back office, side entrance. Yeah.
And did you see congressional staff? Did you see anyone there that probably wasn't protesters, even press? I mean, did you see anyone there that wasn't with the protesters?
Ton of press. Ton of press. You know, like, I you know, probably 50 people of the press, you know, in like in a small area. Everyone's, you know, snapping pictures of everything, which is, it was, you know, definitely interesting. But yeah, so, and we saw maybe a couple people in the windows. I assume they were congressional staffers. What was the general,
you know, sentiment feeling? Was it, did it seem like did people, were people scared? Were people chaotic? Were they vandalizing? What was the general atmosphere? Was it just sort of jovial and almost kind of like a party? Like, what was the general sentiment inside these halls?
So I definitely say probably along the lines of party, like there was a little bit of vandalism. There was, you know, it was limited to a couple windows, which, you know, obviously not great. But, you know, that was the extent of it. And again, people putting, you know, F Antifa stickers, you know, around the building. But that was it with the vandalism. It wasn't, you know.
Was there a difference really in terms of the demographics and the makeup of the people who were inside the building compared to the people who were outside the building? Did you notice a difference? Was it a different type of protest, or was it generally the same?
So by the time, I mean, I'm sure in the beginning it was probably more, you know, probably more males put, because, you know, pushing through the cops, the barriers to get in. But you know, by the time I got there, there was, you know, kids inside, lots of women, old people, young people, everything. Everybody was inside.
So it was a motley crew.
Yeah. It was not, not limited.
Because I know a lot of the videos they seem to show, it showed mostly males, and it seemed to be maybe skewed. But you're painting a different picture, that it was kind of a broad spectrum of society, old and young, male and female. Which kind of goes against this whole narrative of this maybe violent, radicalized mob just ransacking through Congress, and more of just, you know, almost a sit-in equivalent, if I can even describe it like that.
Yeah, no, there was not. I mean, I was there for when they brought in the National Guard, which I assume it was the National Guard, and they pushed everyone out. Even then, there was very, very limited violence. Obviously, there was flashbangs and pepper spray and tear gas and all this stuff, but like very, you know, there was a couple scuffles here and there, but other than that, you know, people left the areas when the police started pushing them away. There wasn't, you know, some crazy amount of violence that was going on.
But before you saw the backup arrive, was there police presence? And if there was, what were they doing? What were they saying? How were they acting? I mean, we've seen videos that seem like almost police were, you know, one man was like running up the stairs. He was an officer, and like this whole mob was following him. I mean, it just, everything seemed almost cartoonish. What was going on?
So there was not, I mean, I'm sure, you know, the Capitol Police were there, but they were not, you know, clearly prepared, you know, clearly were not prepared for, you know, 100,000 people to storm, you know, I had to run up the stairs and try to get in the Capitol. So that was, they were clearly outnumbered and not able to handle that. That's why they were waiting for reinforcements.
Did they treat people? Were they dismissive? Were they very, you know, negative, or were they more, you know, professional to deal with? I don't even know what the word would be.
They were professional. They, I got a ton of tear gas in my face. A ton of people got pepper sprayed. But I mean, it was mostly professional. But I saw, obviously, aside from the woman who got shot, which, you know, apparently got shot, you know, as you mentioned, through a wooden board, which is not the way, you know, that the professional law enforcement you're supposed to happen. But other than that, everything was, everything that I saw was professional. They did their job. We did our job. That's basically how it was.
Now, things began to change later. I mean, how long were you there, and how long do you estimate most people were there before they started to really clean the place out? And how long was that process? Did that process roughly take? Because I remember seeing videos, you know, supposedly after they started cleaning things, after the sergeant at arms or whatever it was declared the House floor is clean, there was still a massive crowd in huge parts of the building, the outside.
So it was, so there was a crowd for probably there about two to 3 hours out there. And that's when they got the reinforcements and basically pushed everybody. And that's when they started using the concussion grenades and tear gas and these, I've never seen these before. They had like paintballs, but like pepper spray paintballs. I don't know.
I saw the paintball pictures. I saw them. They were hanging over the edges there, and they had the containers that you hold them in. So that's when it started to get a little more real.
Yeah. The paintballs they used early on, and they weren't effective, but they changed it up later on to, I think, pepper spray paintballs.
When you were there, did you see anyone that you thought were maybe disingenuous? Because there's a lot of talk now that some people that were infiltrating the crowds, I think there was one report from an FBI agent said like a bus of Antifa guys did show up. They were trying to infiltrate and maybe instigate more and create, you know, some kind of a scene. Do you think there's any validity to that? Do you think, obviously most maybe have been more in line with Trump, but were there people in the crowd that could have been described as members of Antifa undercover?
Not that I saw, not that I noticed. If they were Antifa there, they probably should. That was way too rowdy of a crowd for them to have shown up to. It was really crazy. I'm saying, they wouldn't have shown up, I don't think, to such a thing. Way too risky for them. So I don't think so. Obviously, I could be wrong. They could be, have some really great undercover agents, but.
Now, I mean, what else can you, before we go, I want to also touch on, the implications of this, how you think things are going to go moving forward, what this is going to mean in the grand scheme. But before we get to that, I just want to touch on anything I may have missed. What else can you tell us that you haven't already told us about what you saw today at the Capitol, what you experienced? Basically that.
So, it was obviously crazy, crazy to see. We haven't seen our Capitol stormed in our lifetimes like this. And I think
14 or something, I believe it was like the War 18
in our lifetimes. And unless you're got a really good,
unless you're one of what's his name, that president Harrison that had a grandson that was still alive who just died, right. And he was born in like 1840.
Apparently, the oldest, a widow of a Civil War veteran died like a month ago.
I mean, we're going to drift into a different topic, but the timeline, when you think about sometimes these timeline things, it's crazy to think about. Crazy. Yeah, but anyway. Absolutely. What were you, as you were saying, I cut you off.
Yeah, no worries. It was just a crazy, crazy experience. I think it's being blown out of proportion about how bad it was. I think people are, they're saying people were armed there. Nobody there was armed. Nobody was armed. I mean, maybe one guy, brought his gun, but into DC, but that would be more, that's a moronic move. You don't do that. That's DC has very strict.
So that bad lie that they were shooting into the chamber, which was completely unverified. And now it appears based on this unfortunate death. It shows that there was no shooting towards it. She was unarmed. We see the video where the moment she was killed.
No one was armed. I mean, look, you go to these protests, you see these protests at some other state capitals, you'll see people bring their AR-15s, they're nice, their scars, they're nice guns out. But in DC, it's not allowed. And people, as far as people could, you could tell publicly, obviously, I didn't feel everyone's waistband, but as far as you could tell publicly, nobody had anything there. Maybe some people brought some pepper spray with them, which is apparently also illegal in DC. But, and no one had guns there. No one was armed.
And what about the other things they're saying what else? I mean, what else could you give us that has maybe been misrepresented by the media?
There's no large scale vandalism. There's a couple people who broke a couple windows. If that's the new standard for vandalism, that's fine. It's just, let's
keep it in perspective.
Let's wind that back for the past 9 months. And
a few hours later, they were having two houses of Congress already assembled. So clearly the building was in working order. It wasn't too crazy. I mean, obviously, they seem to have rummaged through some congressional offices and things like that. What do you think of maybe the notion that some of this was kind of egged on and purposely done? Kind of like a stage psyop, so to speak, in order to maybe, go after, take attention away from the votes, from the objections, from the fraud, to discredit Trump, maybe to lead into, you know, what everything everyone's talking about, the 25th Amendment now, and Pence, and how he called the National Guard and not Trump, all these crazy things. Like, we're hearing a lot of things. Plus, Trump has just been banned from Twitter, so his main outlet to communicate with the people has been severed. I mean, there are a lot of pieces right now in motion that, you know, are kind of hard to grasp what's going on. What do you make of it?
I don't. You know, we've had Linwood tweeting, you know, crazy things for the past couple of weeks, and other people are making up stuff. You know, unless I see evidence for stuff, I'm not interested. Right. You know, Linwood's been one thing he tweeted. It was the most ridiculous tweet. It was that people come up to powerful people with babies, with kids, make them and then shoot them with a gun. It's just like. And videotape it and use it to blackmail them. Just like ridiculous stuff. So I'm not interested in any, you know, conspiracy theories unless there's like actual data of some sort to back it up, or, you know, I pulled this out of my ass.
Not just hearsay.
I pulled this out of my ass, guys. It's true now. It's been, you know, given to me by Linwood.
There are some reports that the chief of staff to Mike Pence has been denied entrance to the White House. I mean, there's definitely some things in motion. I mean, what do you think is going to go on? I mean, let's just go into prediction mode. I mean, what do you think is going to be unfolding the next 2 weeks before the 20th? I mean, how do you think this is going to impact Trump, the remainder of his presidency, his legacy? How do you think it's going to impact how people want to handle the fraud if it's just dropped now? I mean, I have to say, thank God we still have a few senators and a decent number of congressmen with some backbone who haven't, you know, caved. I mean, what on earth did the votes to object have to do with this incident? It has nothing to do with each other. And if anything, you really need to examine why the national capital would be stormed and besieged by thousands of people unless there was a general widespread anger and vitriol against the system, because they feel like they've been spat on. They feel like they haven't been represented. They feel like they've been completely ignored. I mean, you don't get to a position like this in society unless there are fundamental structural issues that are just not being taken care of, that are not being addressed. So people just trying to dismiss this and smugly write this off as some cranks who are just storming the Capitol. I mean, that is just a horrible takeaway. We need to look at why this happened, because that's part of the real issue here. Am I crazy in saying that?
So, Gavin, you just said so much there. I'm just going to try to remember it. First is you said, you mentioned that the chief of staff of Mike Pence is being denied.
Yeah, I drifted a bit.
Yeah. So you said you were there, and I had a line, which is great, which is that he should have been denied access to the White House, you know, years ago, because he was a Koch brother worker. And he should have been fired a number of years ago. So that's
great line. I'm glad we still got it in.
Yeah. He should have been denied access years ago. So that's number one. I just like the second you said that, I'm like, okay, that guy should have been denied access years ago.
Yes.
You know, he's just sitting there undermining the whole MAGA agenda. You know, I have no idea what's going to happen. People are just, you know, coming up with crazy, crazy theories on Twitter. I want to see evidence. I want to see, you know, somebody reputable with an actual source. That means not mainstream media. Like, you know, people who actually are like friends with, you know, congressional, with maybe more high up congressional staffers, you know, to come out and, you know, say that they actually heard something. Because otherwise right now it's just people coming up with their own theories. In terms of what's going to happen, I don't know. I think that the election yesterday was really not good for Trump. Not that the base has abandoned Trump in any way, but the idea that is now that the old Republican establishment is going to come back and blame him. Obviously, I don't believe that's his fault. You know, those seats are his fault. Losing those seats are his fault. It's the fault actually of Nathan Deal, the previous Georgia governor, and Brian Kemp. And Raffensperger, and, you know, various numbers
of people that are not named Trump. I mean, they are going to spin this whatever way they can to push this BS narrative that if we return to their version of Republicanism, we'll start winning again. That's just if you look at the numbers, Trump was the only person in the Republican Party who could have reached out to this non-traditional Republican voting bloc and push Republicans over the edge. And when he's not at the top of the ticket and when he's not leading the charge, you're seeing like almost a 300K vote differential. They're not coming out. That makes a difference in these races.
No, absolutely. And it's important, you know, it's important to look how this is going to affect things going forward and to prepare for it. They're going to try to bring out Liz Cheney and Nikki Haley as the new leaders of the Republican Party, you know, two women, and you know, who we have to respect. And this is where it's going from here. They are so, I honestly think they're happy that they lost those Senate seats.
Oh, I think they are too. I think this is all part of, you know, maybe some kind of Machiavellian play to retake the party, because I've tweeted this before. I've said this. The establishment does not care about the intra-party dynamics. It just cares about the intra-party dynamics. It wants to control its own power within the party, within their faction, within their caucus. They don't really care. They don't want to govern. They don't want the power and responsibility of governing. They would gladly be a token opposition. They still get all their money. They still get all their titles. They still get all their grift. And nothing really changes for them. When they're in power, they actually have to do something and they have to be held accountable.
No, you're exactly right. Just to expand on what you said, it is – they don't care to govern. They don't care a big misconception people have is that they believe that our representatives and senators actually believe in the policies that they claim to that they run on. They don't actually believe in these things at all. I've met these people. They're like, they do not believe in them. They completely disagree. They don't care. They're apathetic. One of these, 95% of them genuinely don't care.
Yeah.
And honestly, I know people, maybe this might upset some people. I don't care. It's the truth. David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler cared more than the average U.S. senator.
With her betrayal today in the Senate, I would have agreed with you maybe a week ago, maybe on people like Perdue and such. They were decent senators, horrible candidates, but decent senators. I think people have to separate them. You could be a bad candidate and a better senator. You could be a bad senator and a better candidate. That's a different, you know, spectrum. But even with Loeffler's, you know, betrayal.
Right. So take Loeffler out of the picture for a minute. You had David Perdue. He introduced the RAISE Act. Which is honestly one of the most important pieces of legislation that's been introduced. And it's McConnell's fault that it didn't get a vote. It should have gotten a vote in the Senate. American people should have seen who supports it. And
this is all McConnell's fault.
It's McConnell's fault, the Georgia leadership's fault. People don't know this. In Georgia, they subsidize industries. It's called corporate welfare. It's really evil, really bad. It's where they steal your money and they give it to people to incentivize them to move to the state. One of their biggest corporate welfare queens is the film industry. And the film industry, for those who don't know, which everyone really should know, is 99% liberal. Yeah. So imagine if you take native Georgians' money and give it to a bunch of liberals to move to Georgia. Well, you're going to have a purple state really quickly. It doesn't, you know, it's not going to take
I have friends who moved down there who work in film and video production. They left New York. They were living in Atlanta. I mean, it's a real thing. I mean, these stupid Republican governors and legislators who think so short term. It's like, oh, look, we brought, you know, this industry and this money to Georgia
Why would you want to bring the industry to Georgia? Why would you want to bring the immorality of Hollywood to Georgia? Like, leave it in Hollywood, you know?
This was a state that was R+6 not too long ago that trended to the right of Florida, North Carolina, and it's actually sad what's happening. There have been fundamental issues on the ground there that have shifted it to the left. I still don't believe it was enough to have tipped this election. I still think this was probably won by Trump, a state probably won by Trump, but still there has been upsetting trends on the ground that have been shifting it to the left, and in large part this was due to the Republican governance there that just has their head in the sand and are just completely blind to long-term trends, and they just don't think long term like the Dems do.
No, absolutely. It's like I don't even understand how a Republican could vote for a subsidy for the film industry. It's like, wait, let's bring in liberals who hate us into our state because so we'll have a film industry here. Like, they think it's providing jobs. It's providing jobs to the people that are moving from New York and California to Georgia. It's not providing jobs for native Georgians. So, you know, horrible ideas, and they need to be primaried out. There's no way Kemp is winning another turn. He's going to either be primaried out or he's going to lose to Stacey Abrams. Hopefully not the latter.
I mean, it just seems that there's a lot of really depressing trends going on. We spoke off the record earlier that you were more worried about what happened in Georgia than what happened today. And I agree with you. I think that's a lot more consequential than this this kind of spontaneous outburst of rage against Congress. And, you know, the hypocrisy of what's going on now in the media and the gaslighting, how they're painting this as the worst day in American history. I mean, these people are out of their minds. Anyone who could possibly claim that today is the worst day in American history and compare it to Pearl Harbor or 9/11 or any incident in American history for the most part.
Yeah, this is nothing. Forget Pearl Harbor and 9/11. Forget Pearl Harbor and 9/11. That's ridiculous. Just compare it to the past 9 months. I mean, D.C. was literally on fire.
That's what they're doing, not me. That's what they're doing. Just for
the record. No, right. I know. It's just like D.C. was, the entire city was on fire. Like smoke coming up from like the entire city because the BLM, Antifa lit it on fire. And this is, you know, a couple broken windows. You know, sure, we don't break windows, but like that's the end of the world.
It's hypocrisy. None of them called out, the nationwide anarchy. I remember watching it. It was insane. Every city in America was on fire. Every city was being looted. Here on Fifth Avenue, they were just going up and down the avenues, just ransacking, creating havoc. We watched this for God knows how long, and nothing was done. No one was really prosecuted. No one went to jail. Tons of blood was spilled.
No one condemned it.
No one condemned it.
Marched with them. He like, Black Lives Matter, marching with the Black Lives Matter. Like,
he's a schmuck of the highest order.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with him, honestly. I honestly don't think he has any. I think he's literally a eunuch at this point. I don't know what else is wrong with him. I saw him in the airport, you know, telling people to wear their masks when they were heckling him.
That was amazing.
The man is absolutely pathetic. I can't even call him a man. He's just pathetic. He is just something out of a cartoon or a comic book. Like, I don't even know how to describe that guy. But they're all in on it. They all were, you know, they were singing George Floyd's praises. They were, you know, open arms with BLM. They were, you know, they threw away all their COVID guidelines so people could riot and march and loot. Everything was fine. We were supposed to watch it day in, day out. And now this happens and they're clutching their pearls. They're moralizing self-righteously. And it's like, look, I can understand the argument that this was bad optics. I can understand the argument that we lose the moral high ground. The problem is that we've had the moral high ground for a long time now and it hasn't got us anything. We've had better optics than them for a long time now. It hasn't got us anything.
It's not optics. Optics is the most ridiculous term to use here. It's the media spin. No matter what the media are going to spin it bad. Democrats through the media.
You can't even talk about optics because if you don't control the way that optics gets disseminated through society, it doesn't matter. You're having a moot argument at that point.
Right. If someone says, oh, well, this is bad optics, so it shouldn't have been done. It's just the response is, well, you know, the optics don't matter because the media is going to say, even if it was a peaceful protest, the media would have said, oh, super spreader event inspired by Trump to kill your grandma. That's all the media.
You're waging an uphill battle. You're waging an uphill battle no matter what we do. And, you know, when we had control for 2 years, united government, which is what the Dems are about to have, we barely did anything. We could have really.
One thing we did, we passed a tax cut, a little tax cut. And that was it.
That was it. And then even when we lost
all the budget bills that went through, every single one was the same thing that Obama passed plus more. They just added to the budget bills. There was nothing taken out.
It was a waste. It was a waste of 2 years. We barely did anything. Even when we lost the House, they could have been sending bills to him and he could have continued signing them until the penultimate hour before they changed the delegations to the House. We did nothing. Then we had 2 years of basically he wasn't really able to do anything outside of executive orders and a few other things. And it was a wasted 4 years for the most part. That's why the second term was going to be so critical. But they're not going to miss a beat. They have united government now. They're going to be doing everything in their power to solidify their control for the next generation. They're going to do everything in their power to really just come back and hurt us and hurt the movement, hurt the base, hurt the grassroots, and really just enact revenge.
They're gonna punish us. It's punishing time and they are coming.
Yeah.
They are coming. And the only solution is to come back just as hard and primary out every one of them. Primary out Adam Kinziger, Liz Cheney, and you go down the list. Every one of them needs a primary opponent in a solid, you know, if it's a swing district, leave the representative alone. If it's not a swing district, if it's a solid R district, primary them out.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'm fine with the squishiness. If you're in a purple district that's zero or plus one D, that's fine. I'm willing to work with you on the few issues. But if you're in a Wyoming, if you're in Alaska, if you're in Idaho, if you're in a plus 10 R district in Illinois, you know, get out. Get the hell out of here. You do not represent anyone.
It's, I mean, I guess people on the right, you know, getting all pissy at Susan Collins. Leave the woman alone. You know, she kept the Republican Senate seat.
I was never worried about a Susan Collins. What pisses me off is a Murkowski. What pisses me off is it was a flake. It was a what was his name? The guy in Tennessee, Corker. Those guys piss me off way more than Susan Collins. I'll take a Susan Collins. I don't care. What are we going to do? We're not going to win that seat anyway. I'll take her on the procedural vote. I'll take her vote 90% of the time. She's an institution up there. You know, we get way more votes from her than we ever will from anyone else. So why not take it? That's good politics.
Right, of course, and we do need to focus on those down ballot House and Senate seats. There's a lot of Senate seats that we have up, and it's just going to increase their control. We have an open Pennsylvania seat. It's going to be a disaster. It's not going to be good.
What do you think is the next 2 weeks? I mean, the inauguration and everything. I mean, do you think we're going to see anything else?
Trump needs to pardon
everyone.
Julian Assange.
Yes.
Edward Snowden, yes. Ross Ulbricht, however you say his name, and Martin.
That sounded a little too Hebrew, but yes, yeah. Ross Ulbricht.
And Martin Shkreli.
Shkreli. And how about the declassifications? I want to know if there's UFOs.
Well, they have declassified that. There are UFOs. We just, you know, don't know what they are. But yeah, I mean, look, it's unfortunate that he's not more competent.
I think, look, I'm a loyalist. I support him, but I am willing to criticize when warranted. And I think he was not as effective as he could have been in many situations. I think a lot of that had to do with the people he surrounded himself with. I think his gut instincts were generally spot on. And if he had followed through with them most of the time, he'd be in a way better position today than he is.
If he did what he campaigned on and only that, he would be having an easy second term right now. It's not a question.
Yep.
But, he didn't. He just, you know, he didn't. He did other things.
Yeah. And look, I'm not saying, you know, obviously if COVID hadn't happened, I think, you know, he still would have been okay. Just because things were going so well, he could have just had a traditional second term. But once COVID hit, I mean, he really, you know, it was really back against the wall, and it was always going to be an uphill battle. And they are ruthless. They will do anything they need to do for power. And we never fight back. The Republicans are weaklings. They're just pathetic. They're just absolutely pathetic. They're all about, you know, style over substance. They're all about form and procedure over results. And they just don't fight. And that's why we continue to lose. And they're just pathetic, most of them. They really are. And it's just like this pretension and this condescension and this smugness and this arrogance that's just so justified on their behalf, and they just stick their noses up at everyone like we're a bunch of plebs because we you know, support the president and don't support them, and we were supposedly stupid for doing it. I mean, this is the kind of mentality, this beltway mentality, that led to what happened today. And by the way, going back to what happened today, I still have no idea how on earth these people could have got into the Capitol when both chambers were in session, the vice president was present. They knew there was going to be hundreds of thousands of people in D.C. I mean, regardless of what actually happened, it just seems very strange that it was almost that easy for them to get into the building and cause this havoc. I mean, don't you think it just is a little off, or am I crazy?
Yeah, it's just like if the security is that lax there, I mean.
Remember, the summer with the White House, they were pushing at the gates. That was scary. I remember watching. I was like, these guys are going to storm the freaking White House. Why am I saying freaking? The fucking White House. And they didn't, but I was watching. I was like, they were getting really close. What happened here with the Capitol? I just don't get it.
I just walked right in. Like, I'm like, oh, well, this is cool. Yeah. You know? Yeah, this is interesting. I've never been in the Capitol before.
I think honestly, a lot of the people that were there was like their first time ever there. I think they were honestly, like, "Oh, this is, someone was joking." What are those things called that they have at the movie theaters? Those like red velvet things on the stands.
I don't know the name.
But like they were joking. They were like, oh, well, at least the mob didn't like knock them over. They were like walking through like the designated lines to get in, like as if it was like still like being ticketed. it was like, this is the most polite mob ever. What did you make of those guys? That guy, that crazy guy with no shirt on and the fur horned Viking helmet thing. I mean, what the hell? They didn't look like Trump people to me, honestly. I thought they are. I don't know.
So I think that they are Trump people. I think that guy is some sort of Q conspiracy guy. Sorry, my voice is a little hoarse from the yelling
today.
Pepper spray, tear gas, the yelling today. But yeah.
Saying Ross Ulbricht.
Yes. How do you say his name? What's
right? I don't know. I've never heard. These are one of the things I only read about. I never really hear it out loud. Ross Ulbricht.
Those four are the biggies that Trump needs to pardon. But yeah, so I mean, look, I think these people are, you know, are Trump people. I honestly, screw Nancy Pelosi. I think it was good that they got to her office. I think that was amazing. I think that was sweet. I don't think that was a bad thing. You know,
it's some crazy images. I mean, those images are going to go down in history. I mean, the things we saw when they were standing in the congressional chamber, I mean, it was like something to behold. I mean, I was almost like dumbfounded that this was happening. I mean, it's been a crazy 2020. I didn't think 2021 would start off with such a bang. But I guess we were going to have a rocky few months ahead. That's for sure.
It's not looking good, unfortunately. And I mean, you know, you could see after that Senate race and magazine sales for guns, you can't get magazines now. They're sold out because they think, and people think there's going to be high capacity, you know, mag bans.
I mean, you know, I think all we have left is really the Second Amendment. I mean, I thank God we have it. I mean, that's one of the last few checks on government. And, you know, hopefully we'll see some real leadership at the state levels in many of these Republican states to push back against any federal overreach. And
yeah, so let's get back to reality now for a second.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's not happening. That's what we wish would happen.
That's what we wish will happen. None of it's going to happen. Manchin is not going to side with us in anything important. Neither is Kristen Sinema. You know, they, you know, maybe they'll vote with us when it doesn't really cost them, you know, any political capital with the Dems. But now that they're going to be critical votes, they're going to get whipped into shape real quick. And I also blame the Republicans in 2018. I mean, we had so many seats that were up in 2018 that we could have picked off from the Dems. We didn't. I mean, Ohio, we could have easily have held both seats in Ohio. We should have picked up Michigan. We should have done a lot better in 2018. So we wouldn't have been in this situation now where it was such a tight margin and it came down to Georgia. I mean, this is just pathetic. McSally in Arizona. I mean, give me a break.
I mean, McSally twice in Arizona, Gavin.
Twice. I mean, it's just like they want to lose. It's just like they want to lose, and they think no one notices, or they just don't care. They're just as blatant as the Dems in many regards, and they just don't give a crap what anyone thinks.
I don't know whose idea it was to have her run again. Like whoever that was, out of the party for good.
But they're the kind of people, the people that come up with those ideas, these stupid consultants and these strategists, the ones that are, you know, blaming Trump for everything right now, because that's all they know how to do is blame Trump. These are perennial losers who can't make it in the private sector, who've never really won a real race, who don't know anything what's going on in the American body politic. But they're going to tell everyone, oh, it's Trump's fault, it's Trump's fault, it's Trump's fault, because he's an easy scapegoat. That's all they can do. When it's their own decisions, when it's their own campaigns, when their own candidates that have always consistently failed, despite whatever Trump has done to prop them up. I mean, in many cases, Trump is the only thing that held us together. I mean, if you look at the comparisons when Bush left office and when Obama left office and how obliterated both of their parties respectively were in Congress, Bush left us in a crappy situation in the House and in the Senate. Obama left the Democrats in a horrible situation in the Senate and the House. I mean, Trump compared to that, I mean, you know, it's not great, but we're certainly not nearly as bad as where Obama or Bush were when they left office. So all these people, they don't know what they're talking about. And they preach bad ideas. And what's going to be so annoying and insufferable over the next few months is because of Trump's on-paper loss and because of the on-paper losses in Georgia and elsewhere, we're never going to – and then because we had some down-ballot success elsewhere for Republicans, which still doesn't make much sense, what we're going to see now for the next several months – or several years is, oh, the Republican Party is what people like. That's why we won down ballot. It's Trump where people rejected. It's Trump. It's Trump. It's Trump. None of these people could get 10 people to show up to their rallies. Trump brings out hundreds of thousands of people at a moment's notice. That's real enthusiasm. That's real support. You can't manufacture that in BS digital statistics on Twitter or BS poll numbers, whatever it is. He has the real body of the party behind him, and they just will never get that.
Yeah, and it's going to be a fight now. It's going to be a fight in 2022. It's going to be a fight in 2024. I mean, it's going to be
a bloodbath for the Civil War in the party.
Yep, and I just hope that people are willing to educate themselves and not, you know, just follow, you know, Nikki Haley blindly into amnesty and, you know, corporate bailouts. It's a shame. We need someone who's like a fighter and someone.
Who do we have? Who's our bench besides Trump?
I mean, as unpopular as this is, I don't want Trump to run again. I want somebody who is going to be more
fine. But who?
We have a number of good options. I think the most likely option is probably, you know, Ron DeSantis. You know, he's going to win.
I like Ron. What he's doing in Florida is amazing.
Yes, I think he's the most likely option. I think Cruz, as much as many people hate him, would be a better option. Tougher time winning, you know, due to popularity. But I think he would be more. He could be more effective.
I worked for Cruz. I mean, I think he's brilliant, but he has his downsides in terms of just his personal appeal, which I think just comes down to him kind of being a nerd more than anything. But I would hope, you know, both. I like both of them. I really do.
So, and I mean, Cruz stuck, you know, not like six of the 12 Republican senators who promised to object today flaked. And, you know, Cruz did not. And he's been solid on basically every issue.
Good. And I'm very impressed with him. I'm very impressed with Hawley. I think we do have a decent number of people, not decent number, but those six senators. I mean, I'm honestly shocked that we still held them.
Right. No, but I mean, we also, some people are upset about Tom Cotton about his latest votes, but he's solid on the culture war that we're fighting here.
And, look, I get that. Like, even when people were saying, oh, there were people that didn't vote for the stimulus, they cited some more libertarian members of Congress, even like a Matt Gaetz. And I'm like, listen, you know, if you've been consistently against spending and you've been great with it, Trump and all the other issues, I can understand that because at least you're consistent. There's a philosophical reason. You're anti-big government, whatever it is. You've opposed the foreign aid and you've also opposed the direct assistance. Fine. Okay, I get that. At least it's a consistent principle. I can respect them even if I disagree. I can never respect the people that have no principles that'll vote for, you know, the bloat and the foreign aid and all this defense subsidies and corporate bailouts and all this other nonsense, but can't stomach $1,000 payment, a $2,000 payment to a struggling American. I mean, that's where I draw the line. So I think even in a case like Cotton, you know, if they're supporting us on a ton of issues, but they're not nearly on board with us with this fraud thing, he lost a lot of points with me, but we have to work with people like this because we're never going to find utopia unless we can make deals.
Right, of course. And it's really, I think the representatives you just described, first thing, are the majority of the Republican caucus.
Yep.
And those are the, I think that's the reason that we lost the Senate, because the Republicans were willing to send out, and the Democrats too, were willing to, you know, send out, you know, billions of dollars of foreign aid to everyone, you know, to help every country, but they couldn't, you know, find the money to help Americans. In addition to all the corporate welfare and bailouts, they were, you know, sending to various different companies. Like there was no intelligence here on the part of Republicans. Like there's a way to, you can be principled. You can say, okay, I'm against spending, but the problem is the Republican Party is only against spending when it comes to people who are not funding them. When it comes to the lobbyists, no problem. And, you know, hand out blank checks, like it's no tomorrow, you know, to the defense contractors. Oh, here, how much do you want me to write in it? And it's just like when it comes to the American people who are not, you know, donating to them or, you know, running PACs for them in as large quantities as, you know, these and as directly as these companies are, they're like, you know, we don't see a real benefit for us. And I mean, this is honestly how most people don't understand. This is actually how politics work.
Yeah.
Unbelievably sad. It's just who is go? Who are the lobbyists? Who are we owned by? Who are, you know, who are we?
It's all pay to play. It's all graft. It's all disgusting. It never goes. It goes on and on and on. And I just hate how they take their moral high horse and their self-righteousness to attack Trump when they engage in some of the swampiest nonsense ever. I mean, McConnell, I mean, this guy, you know, he cost us the Senate. I mean, he really is just his all he cares about is a little fiefdom. And his stupid little Machiavellian schemes in the Senate, his parliamentary procedures and whatever you want to call it. And he can't see the bigger picture. He worked against actively the 2K direct assistance package to Americans a week before this critical election. I mean, you know, this is what we're dealing with. I mean, we're just dealing with either people who are stupid or people who know what they're doing and they just don't care. And they're just actively self-sabotaging.
They genuinely, it's the issue, as I mentioned earlier, they don't believe in this stuff, and they just don't believe. They just like, give me the money, and that's it.
Yeah, and that's why our system is broken. That's why DC is broken. That's why our country seems to be broken, and things are not going to get better much. Things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. But we could talk about this forever. I'm glad you came back on the show to give us the updates about what you saw in DC. I want to have you back. I remember our first episode. It was great. But as always, I want to pass the last word off to you for whatever else you want to say. And then please let us know where we can follow you, Gabby.
Yeah. So it's actually going to be similar to the
the last spiel,
which is the primary elections. Go out, get involved, volunteer, or donate to the conservative candidate in the race. Otherwise, all of this is worth nothing. People talk about, oh, there's a new party. We're going to make a new party. Let's be realistic here for a second. This Republican Party is the avenue to the ballot box. We need to put up our candidates, not the people who don't care about the policies, but people like Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Greene, and other, you know, quality representatives who actually believe in the issues and believe in the stuff, because that's the only way they're going to vote, you know, in the way is, if, you know, the way you want is if they actually believe in it. So you have to find people who actually believe in strong conservative principles, not, you know, not believe in, say, you know, sending your money to every country on under the sun and any company that, you know, that comes knocking. So get involved, donate. It's more important than ever in 2022. We've got important, you know, Senate seats in North Carolina, Pennsylvania. I think in Ohio. Yeah. In Ohio as well, there are, you know, that are up. So we need to defend those and we need to fight. So yeah. And Gavin, I appreciate having me on. You could find me at Gavi Shapiro, GavishapiRo on Twitter. Otherwise I don't do social media, and yeah, thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you for making it all the way back to your abode, wherever it may be, from DC, and giving us the latest updates. So stay tuned, guys, for more Waxcast podcast. We're going to have a lot more episodes coming to you soon. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. 5 stars, please. And coming back very soon.